We're going to have a quick class on Midrashim, their role and interpretation. It's an overview, but let's begin. So we know that part of our oral tradition is all kinds of stories and things that even sound like folklore. And there's phenomenal things that are said, some about figures we are familiar with in Tanakh, and some about figures we don't know about, and sometimes there are stories that are completely abstract. That and the question is, why are we taught these stories, and how are we to understand these stories? What is the purpose, and what is the meaning? So we have to discern between midrashim that give us insights as to things that happened in Tanakh. And on those midrashim, sometimes the rabbis came to share with us things that we wouldn't have known from the text. You read the text of the Akedah, and it's a terrible story. You have the tradition that he was 37 years old, and he went of his own volition, and you hear a different story. So sometimes it's very, very important, the insights that our sages give us. It gives a totally different understanding of the story. And sometimes that's what it's there for, to give you the broader picture. Sometimes the midrashim are derived from the text, and we have to learn the system. There are 32 laws of derivation that we have on tradition on how to analyze the text. Where do I say that a sentence infers about another sentence? Where do I say that the sentence is a standalone? Where do I say align these stories and put them together and get a full picture? There are laws of derivation in analysis of the text of Torah. Sometimes words give us insights. When the Akedah is described as Vayelechu Shneihem Yachdav, the two of them went in unison. So our sages drew a lot from those words. So in the Midrashim, we have to discern between A, Midrashim that define those stories in Tanakh, where sometimes their whole purpose is to give you the definition of that story. B, midrashim that are derived from words in Tanakh, where those midrashim, again, it would seem, are giving me a literal understanding of what's going on. Even though I read the story, I see two lines. It says, "Bayom ahu, on that day, yigdel hamisped, the eulogy will be great, kemisped hadad rimon ben tavrimon ben vikat Megiddo." Like the eulogy of Hadad Rimon, the son of Megiddo, in the valley of Megiddo. The only problem is that there's no such eulogy mentioned anywhere in Tanakh. So you look to the laws of derivation, and suddenly you see that it's describing two different eulogies, and it's giving you a different message. It's not the eulogy of Hadad Rimon in the valley of Megiddo, but rather two eulogies, the eulogy of Hadad Rimon and the eulogy that was in the valley of Megiddo. Again, once it's derived from the verse, it seems that the message is much more literal. Chazal are telling you what happened there. If Chazal tell us that Esav came in from the field and he was tired, so Chazal say the word tired in Tanakh often refers to being tired after committing a murder. So then Chazal are telling you Esav came in after he had murdered Nimrod. So part of it is a tradition they had, because from the text doesn't seem like they knew who he murdered. And part of it was a law of derivation, that the word ayef, it says ayefan nafshi le'orgim. The term ayef is often a reference to being tired after murder. So Chazal say, Esav came in after committing a murder. He wasn't just simply tired when he asked Yaakov for those lentils. And so on. So there's those two types of midrashim have to be viewed in a different sense than what we're going to discuss. Meaning there are midrashim where the midrashim are there to interpret the text. The Medrash says Moshe and Aaron were sitting in mourning, and the Jewish people came from the young to the old. And the Medrash says, why does it say from the young to the old? It says they came clambering. Moshe and Aaron were sitting in mourning over their sister Miriam. And the Medrash says Moshe turned to Aaron and he said, you see the masses coming? What do you think they're coming for? Aaron said, oh, such good people, the Jews. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. He has a good eye. He has a kind heart. He says to Moshe, he says, these people are so good. They're all coming to comfort us over the loss of our sister. And Moshe says to Aaron, you still look at life that way? You still let your good eye over cloud your judgment? Don't you realize that if they were coming to do something positive, there would be respect between the young and the old? and the way they're coming, the young are pushing the old, and the old are pushing the young, and they're coming here to make trouble. Watch! Let's see in a second if they really came to be nice to us or to give us problems. So Moshe and Aaron are sitting in mourning over their sister. Their sister had just passed away. And what did the Jewish people do? They come and they say, what you're doing to us? We're all dying of thirst. Where's our water? What's wrong with you guys? Wait a second. They're sitting in mourning. So they're the leaders. Fine. That's the way you approach them. So the Medrash is giving us insight as to what happened there. Now, does it literally mean that all the people came clamoring? Were the young really pushing the old? That's a good question. Or was the message the theme of what was actually going on at that scene? But at any rate, when we read Midrashim about text in Tanakh, so there we're much more inclined to say, the Midrash is giving me insight and a broader view of, as to what's happening. That's Midrashim on the text. Midrashim that are derived from the text, we have the same rule. The assumption is it's coming to teach me about the text. Now we have other Midrashim. We have Midrashim that describe things that have nothing to do with what we see in the text. God is about to create the world, and he summons in angels, and he asks them, should I create the world? And the angels say, bad idea. No, no, man is going to be a total disappointment. Don't create the world. So God destroys those angels and brings in a new group. Second group comes in, God says, should I create the world? And they say, terrible idea. Think of man. He has so many foibles. Not a good idea. So God destroys those angels and brings in a third group. Should I create man? Should I create the world? No, man is going to be such a frustration. Why would you want to do such a thing, God? The world's perfect now. You've created man. There's going to be all kinds of imperfections. Boom, God destroys those angels. Group after group has a good reason to say not to create man. Then finally, God summons in a group of angels and they say, well, if you want to create man, it would be a good idea to create the capacity for tshuva first, because man is going to have weaknesses, man is going to have failings, man is going to be a disappointment. With all of that, the only way a world can sustain itself is if man is given the opportunity to make up what he's done wrong. And so Hashem says, great idea, fine, we'll create tshuva first and then create the world. Now, what's the Midrash telling me? Did the angels tell God something he didn't know beforehand? Did the angels mess up when they gave the answer, the first group and the second group and the third group? Or was this a message? Meaning this is the theme of what we're supposed to understand. Man can look at his life and say, I've disappointed God. And the Midrash says, no, you haven't. This was part of the plan. Very often, man can say, Hashem had such expectations of me, I could have done differently, look at where I am today. And the message of the Midrash is, this was part of the plan. And Hashem didn't want a different world. Meaning, the answer could have been, let's create man who is perfect. And Hashem does not answer that to the angels. The answer is, I will create man with all those imperfections, knowing his weaknesses, and nonetheless, give him the capacity to make up for what he's done. So now, is it so important to read that Midrash and understand that there was actually a conversation? Hashem called in the angels. They gave this answer. Hashem said, zap with you. Boom, they're gone. Next group of angels. Is that the message of the Midrash? Or is the Midrash giving me an understanding as to perspective on the world? A perspective that Chazal wanted me to have when I approach life. And so on. We have many Midrashim where the message of the Midrash, it's far less important whether there were factually angels that came in, were created so that they would view the world from a lens of perfection and then say, man doesn't fit a plan of perfection, God, so don't create him, and then God zaps them. Or is the Midrash really giving me perspective? And that's where we have many Midrashim, where the Rambam and the Meiri tell us, look to the message of the Midrash. The Midrash says things in fantastic terms, conversation, God, angels, and you can remain on that, what I call third grade level of understanding, that there was this conversation and the zapping of angels, or you can understand there's something else going on here, there's a message. And that's where we have to be careful, because sometimes you could take a Midrash that's literal and turn it into a concept. And sometimes the commentaries are not in agreement as to what happened. When Yaakov's fighting with an angel in the Torah, so here I have a text, and I have a Midrash. Avek ish imo adalot ha-shachar. So the Midrash says that Ish is an angel. Either Gabriel, the angel who fights on behalf of Israel, or Esav's angel. Two opinions in the Midrash. Was it a bad guy angel or a good guy angel? But either way, Yaakov's fighting. Okay, so you look at the Rambam, you look at some of the commentaries, and you understand there wasn't an angel, there wasn't a physical fight, there was an inner fight. Yaakov Avinu had to contend with certain aspects of his personality, and the Pasuk describes it. Now you're taking a Pasuk. This becomes more dangerous. Because the Pasuk says, Vayeavek ish imo adalot hashachar. The Pasuk describes a physical event that happened. And you suddenly have to say, wait, no, the Pasuk doesn't mean literally. But Rambam says that's part of our tradition on how to understand the Pasuk. Rambam says when the Navi describes a day where there'll be no sun and no moon, it's not talking about the lack of a sun of a moon or a moon. And when the Navi describes a lamb will sit with a lion, it's not talking about a lamb and a lion. It's talking about nations that will make peace. So Rambam is willing to take it further than other commentaries. Rambam is saying there's an idea of world peace that's headed here, and even the texts that seem to be literal should not be taken literally sometimes. Other commentaries don't agree with Rambam on that. They say Yaakov fought with an angel. You see, Yaakov was limping at the end of the battle. It certainly sounds like there was a physical fight going on here. So we don't always have agreement how far we take this concept, that sometimes the Medrash is giving us a theme as opposed to a literal story. But either way, even if it's a physical battle that Yaakov's fighting, the message of the battle remains a message. It's not about the physical fight. Yaakov's fighting the physical angel of Esav. This becomes very challenging because it's tempting to take the Midrashim and just give them all an interpretation. And then you end up missing some of the wonderful Midrashim and misinterpreting them. And the Gemara tells us in Megillah and in Sota that if you have a verse that says, don't pass your children before the fires of Molech. Right? There was a pagan belief that there's this god called Molech, you pass your kid in the fire, and that's a way of sacrificing him to Molech. In fact, it was a far more cruel procession. They actually had a castle for Molech, and inside the castle they had a figurine, an idol, in the innermost room, and the head of the idol had the face of a calf, and the idol had metal hands, and at the bottom of the idol, they had a little teepee structure where they would heat up a fire. And the arms of the idol would become red hot. And if a person brought a sacrifice to this idol, so if they brought a simple offering, they'd stand outside and they'd get to hear that the idol said thank you and they'd leave. The priest would come out and say, the idol says thank you, you can go. If they brought something of greater value, they could enter the first room. More value, the second room. The higher the value, the more rooms they can enter to approach the idol. If they actually sacrificed their own child, they could enter the seventh room inside the idol, and they'd be allowed to kiss the calf on its lips. Agalim yishakun. And then they'd be escorted out as their child was placed on these boiling hot metal figures of a hand and burnt to death. And this was the sacrifice in honor of Molech. But then they'd be able to say, I got to kiss the idol. I gave the ultimate sacrifice to the idol. So the Talmud says a person might be tempted to translate the Pasuk, don't teach your children non-Jewish education. It says, don't pass your child for Molech. So it means don't give them the education that'll lead them down that road. And a person will say, I'm being more pious. I'm taking the verse of the Torah, and I'm expanding it. I'm teaching people to keep their children with good education. The Talmud says that's a terrible thing. You're destroying the Torah. So sometimes a person can be tempted to take this theme of giving a deeper meaning to what we're reading and misapply it. And we understand that then you could really destroy the Torah. And that's why it's important to study and learn and gain a tradition, because left to our own understanding, we can take the whole Torah and make it into wonderful themes. It's not about eating kosher. It's about being healthy. It's not about honoring your parents. It's about being caring for other people. No, there's a mitzvah to honor your parents. You have to service them. And that's a mitzvah. And you can't just say, I'll honor them. I'll be nice to them. I'll put them in a nice old age home. And I'll make sure they have a nice nurse to take care of them. No. You have to service them. Service them means literally take care of them. So the mitzvahs have definitions, and that's why this concept, as important as it is in understanding Medrash, also has to be tempered. You can't just apply it. That could be the destruction of Torah if we just apply it that way. Were the walls of Jericho really swallowed into the ground? Did the Yamsuf really split? Meaning, how far do we take it? So even Rambam explains the Yamsuf really split, meaning there are places where the Torah tells us it was a miracle, and that's it. No one argues there was a miracle there. So that's what's difficult in this. Knowing when and how far to apply it is not as obvious as it would seem. Because were there 7 days of creation? Did Adam really exist? And the answer is yes. Even Rambam agrees there was an Adam. There was a man named Adam, and humanity came from him. So Rambam doesn't say that's a metaphor. And Rambam would say, if you say that's a metaphor, you're going out of our tradition. You'll ask me, what do I do with science? It's a good question. It's a great question. But I cannot change what the Torah says. And even the Rambam, who took it very far, or the Ralbag, everyone agrees there was an Adam. There was an Adam HaRishon. Humanity comes from an Adam. So those are some of the sides. I want to add two more points. One is the Rambam in the introduction to Mor Nevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed. Rambam says there are two types of metaphors in Chazal. There's a metaphor where there's one message, and there's a beautiful story surrounding that one message, and you would be foolish to try and figure out every word of that story, what it's telling you, because it's not telling you. It's telling you a message, a general message. And Rambam then goes on to bring a story from Mishlei. In Proverbs, you have a story about a woman who's very active, she's very hyper, and she sometimes home and sometimes she's outside. And when her husband leaves town, she goes looking for a guy who she can seduce. So she waits, and she looks, and she stands on every street corner to see where is there a young man who's available. And finally, when she sees one, she just walks over him. And what I'm telling you now is verses. It's not Nathaniel Frankenthal speaking. It's a translation of verses. So don't be upset at me. And if there are children watching this, this isn't from children from now on.
From where is this?
Mishlei. It's psukim. It's overt psukim. It says, "Heiza panea, heiza panav v'nashekalo." She brazenly looks the young man in the eye and kisses him on the lips, and then she says, "Come on home with me. My man's gone away. He's taken the money bag with him. He ain't coming back for a long time. And I've prepared the bed for you. I've put beautiful perfumes on the bed. Marvadim ravati arsi chatuvot etun mitzrayim. Nafti mishkavim moral limekinamon. I put the most beautiful perfumes. I put the nicest sheets." And she's inviting him to commit adultery. So you have this long verse, and this is Rambam's example. You have maybe 10 verses describing the seduction of a young man by an adulterous woman. And says Rambam, if you would try to look at every word in the pasuk and say, well, what's that teaching me? Then you'd be wrong. There's a message. There's a theme to the full story. And the story is made interesting or captivating by going into the details. And so Rambam says, when you read Midrashim, you have to know, when does each word of the Midrash teach me a concept? And when is it a general theme? And the details of the story are just to make it interesting. So that's point number one. Point number two is sometimes Midrashim were part of the speech to get a point across. Sometimes the rabbis had to keep the people focused. So if you keep talking laws, so people fall asleep. You could learn halachot for about 12 to 15 minutes. You could stay focused. That's the attention span we have for studying halachos. I'm saying as a teacher, I've seen that most people, their attention span is about 12 minutes. To understand halachos. More than 12 minutes, if you're learning halacha, 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 you lost people. You can't. And so the rabbis would spice their speeches with stories. And sometimes the stories were not to be taken literally. They were there as midrashim to keep people's attention. But here comes the rule. The rule is, it says in Proverbs, that the way intelligent people speak is that their proverbs, even their stories, in their literal sense, have an important message. So that if people walk away and they don't remember what was the message behind the story, even if they only remember the simple story, they walked away with a message. And that's the rule of Midrashim as well. Midrashim were written by our sages. So even if you hear a fantastic story and you're not sure what the story was coming to illustrate, you fell asleep during the rabbi's speech Friday night. But hopefully, if the rabbi was able to adhere to that rule, which is very hard, I speak now as a rabbi, it is very hard to adhere to that rule, to make sure your stories have educational messages, even if the people don't remember the message, they only remember the story. But that's the rule, at least in Chazal, that if you don't know what the message is trying to teach you, it's still worth learning the Medrash. Because on its simplistic level, the Medrash will also teach us to be better people. And that's the rule the Medrash says. You want to be a God-fearing person, make sure to learn Medrash as well. The Medrash, the stories, develop within us an appreciation and a connection to our Creator on a totally different level. Learning halachot is important. Learning philosophy is important. Learning emunah is important. Learning Medrash is what talks to our heart, talks to our soul, and it's important. And even if we don't understand the theme behind the Medrash, nonetheless, the stories in their simplistic sense also help us grow. So that's a quick overview of the concept of Midrashim.